All right, here we go. This is actually a topic that I'm also interested in. I see that you're interested as well, about the question of, would Chazal just make a halacha based on a pasuk? What do I mean? Would they ever just say, you know, it's a mitzvah to put on tefillin, as it says, Ukshartem lo'os, ayadacha v'ayilu totavos be'enacha. Is there ever a Chazal, a Torah Shebaal Peh idea like that? Now, I can make arguments on two sides. I can make it on the side of there would be, because it's halacha, and the Torah Shebaal Peh might include, would include halachot even though it's already in Torah Shebiksav. On the other hand, as I'm hinting over here, why would it be in Torah Shebaal Peh if it's already in Torah Shebiksav?
A mitzvah because it appears in either Torah Shebaal Peh or Torah Shebiksav, or is it that because it appears in Torah Shebaal Peh, and then some of those mitzvahs appear in Torah Shebiksav?
Right. There, I mean, there's a lot of things that don't appear in explicit detail, at least in the Mishnah. They appear in other things. We have more details about stuff from, let's say, the Masechta Ketanot have more details about, let's say, Geirut, about Mila, about Sefer Torah. Those kinds of things are just not present really in the Mishnah, and not so much, not enough in the Gemara. But your question, I think, is significant in asking a more basic question. I get Torah Shebichsav. It's the Torah. It's the maybe the various books of Nevi'im and Ketuvim as well, if we would call that Torah Shebichsav. But the question is Torah Shebaal Peh Torah Shebichsav plus, like an explanation of Torah Shebichsav, or is it completely separate, meaning Torah Shebichsav and then Torah Shebaal Peh does not overlap? It obviously talks about the stuff in Torah Shebichsav, but it will have lots of other things that are not in Torah Shebichsav, and it's not trying to ever overstep on the things that are said in Torah Shebichsav. You hear what I'm asking? Are they two separate? You know, you wouldn't want to read the sequel to a book saying the exact same stuff in certain chapters as the first book. I already read that. I already know that. Right? That's the question. I thought that was where you were going with it, if that's what you're getting at. And that's the question we should concern with ourselves tonight. How did I get into this? Well, I was writing an article for the Kol Mevaser journal that's at YU. It's a thought. A Jewish thought journal or magazine. I don't know what they do anymore about it. If they're doing anything, their website's like not doing so well. It was down for a time, and I redid it. Anyway, I wrote an article about the Machloket Rashi and Tosfot about whether there is an obligation for every Talmid Chacham to know Tanakh Baal Peh, or rather not Baal Peh, but to know it cold, to know it well, or to at least learn it. And Tosfos says that you don't really need to know all of Tanakh. You don't have to read it, even though the Gemara says that you should split your day into thirds, or at least split your learning into thirds, one for Mikra, one for Mishnah, one for Gemara. We're going to see how the different opinions might have understood this. But I wrote an article basically trying to examine the idea of Tosfos. Did they believe it should be part of the curriculum to learn Tanakh? And versus Rashi, fine. I came across a machlokes in Rashi versus Tosfos in the Gemara that seems to hinge on this question. And we'll get back to that towards the end. Well, we'll see the machlokes soon. We'll get back to how it hinges on that question towards the end. And I wrote a whole article about this, and I had a ton of chidushim in the Rambam, because we'll see that maybe the Rambam takes a side on this question of whether Chazal will put a pasuk, it'll just be a teaching from a pasuk, because I found some nafkaminas, basically based on the Rambam, based on others, and I thought I had a really great article, and I, second article after this first one, just like a sequel to it.
It's always good when you have an easy setup for it.
I know, right? And I did a lot of research. I decided I wasn't going to do it for Kol Mevaser. This is a lot of Gemaras. I'm bringing together a lot of different halachot. I have a ton of chidushim I want to say about this. And I wrote it all up in rabbinic Hebrew, and for their Beit Yitzchak, they had a Hebrew language journal as well that they were publishing every year. And I submitted it. It was probably 12 pages long in Hebrew. And it was, I was very proud of it. Never wrote anything in like Hebrew before. I'm sure my grammar was atrocious. It probably still is. I'm still not that great at Hebrew, but I wrote it and I was very proud of it. And I submitted it. I had an editor go through it and calls me up and he says, thanks for your submission, but we've decided not to publish it. So of course I'm like, he said, if you have any questions, here's my number. Of course I call him up immediately and I said, why aren't you publishing? And he says, it's an article. It's well written, but I don't think it's true. So listen to this year. Tell me if you think that I'm off base. I'm not going to do all the chidushim in the Rambam. I said to him, why don't I just take out the chidushim in the Rambam? If you don't like them, that's why they're chidushim. If you just want me to stick with non-chidushim, that's fine. And he said, even that, I'm not interested in. Yeah, obviously, he just didn't like it. He just didn't like the idea. I had.
It almost sounds like he's like indirectly calling you like possibly like a
gopher. Something. Like, I don't think there's any kfir here, although it gets into categories of very interesting places. We'll see. We'll see throughout this year. That's why it's an adventure in methodology. Here we go. I'll start like this. I was reading a Torah Tamima. The Torah Tamima is by Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein. Late 1800s, early 1900s, he basically collected. Are you familiar with the Torah Tamima?
No.
He collected. It was a very cool project. He took Gemaras and various Midrashim, not everything, and listed it by the pasuk that comes up in the Torah, and gives a little explanation of what he thinks is going on in the drasha. So if in, let's say we're doing Sota, right? In the beginning of Sota deals with the drasha on the words aid in ba, right? So he will give you a couple of the Gemaras that do drashas on aid in ba and tell you exactly what the drashas are going on there, what he, in his opinion. So it's a very fascinating thing. In his commentary on Shemot Lametet Chavbet, Ut Chet, on the idea of the Mi'il in the Mishkan. So what is it made out of? The Mi'il? Kulo shel techilet haya. That's what the Gemara in Pesachim says. It has to be completely made out of techilet, says the Gemara in Zvachim pei chet amud bet. Why? What? It shouldn't be made out of snails. It should be completely the color blue, the color of techilet. Right, Shenemar, and what's the proof pasuk the Gemara gives? That you should make the mi'il completely tchelet. It should be tchelet. How do I know? Because it says it in the pasuk. Little weird. Torah Tamima has a problem with that. Lo yadati mar chidsho b'gemara b'din zeh. I don't know what the chiddush is in the Gemara here. A mefurish pasuk, a law that's explicit in the Torah. It seems to me, says the Torah Tamima, she'ein ze miderech ha-Gemara, it is not the way of the Gemara, it's not the methodology of the Gemara, be'alma, in general, and it's interesting that he put that in, l'horot din mefurash mamash kevayato b'Torah, to teach a law that is explicit as it is written in the Torah. So he has a lot of qualifiers. That's the same exact law that says in the Torah, that's what the Gemara is going to declare. What's the point of doing that? He says, there is no point, so he is surprised that they are doing this. Instead, what does he do? He comes up with a possible reason, meaning of what they said. They said it has to be kulo tchelet. Now, if you have rov tchelet, you can call that halachically kulo tchelet, because rov is rubo kikulo. He says, you might think that you can add some stuff in. What the Bryce is telling you is a bigger chiddush than what it says in the Torah. The Torah says it should be rov. That's the biblical law. And they said, no, the chiddush, really what it means is that it has to be completely tchelet. It cannot have any other colors in the entire thing. That's his opinion. But let's examine this. Is that true? In his opinion, he says, there is no law in the Gemara, nothing in Torah Sheba'al Peh. It is not the way of the Gemara, that's how he put it, Derech HaGemara, to include laws in the Torah Sheba'al Peh that are already explicit in Torah Shebichtav. So let's see, is that possible? Apparently, and I saw this phrased by others this way, I'm not phrasing it this way, it seems like the Torah Tamima forgot it's a machlokas. It's a machlokas, Rashi, and Tosfos. So So I don't know if he forgot it. I think he's maybe siding with one instead of the other. But it's a machlokas Rashi and Tosos whether this is indeed done in the Mishnah or the Gemara. And it's an amazing thing that they would even have like an explicit
dispute on Gersos.
It's not a dispute on Gersos. It's a dispute whether the Gemara or Mishnah will ever do that. And if they do it, there has to be an explanation. Okay? So let's see that debate, Rashi and Tosos, about whether Psukim will be included in Torah Shabbat Peh. Okay? Yevamot Mem Tet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says like this on Mem Tet Amud Aleph. Ishto Shemeta, let's say a man's wife dies, Mutar Ba'achota, he's allowed to marry her sister. Meaning he can't marry her sister in her lifetime, not unlike Yaakov, right? Yaakov Avinu, he can't marry two sisters at the same time. But if she, if his wife dies, then the other, then her sister is mutter to him. Garsha Meta, let's say they get divorced, and then she dies, he's also allowed to marry her sister. Nisei t'la'acher umeta, if he gets married to another woman, a different woman, and she dies, mutar ba'achota, you can get married to her sister. Yivam toshimeta, if it's his yivama, it's his he's chayv to her in yibum, and she dies, then he would be allowed to marry her sister, etc., etc. The Mishnah goes on. And yivama nunamet aleph, commenting on this Mishnah, Rav Yosef makes an incredible statement. Rav Yosef, I'm finding, cares about Talmudic methodology because I did Hilchosa de Mashicha recently over the summer with some guys, and it's also a Rav Yosef statement. Let's see. I'm a Rav Yosef. Take a look. Source number three. I'm a Rav Yosef. Kan Shana Rebbe Mishnah She'eno Tzricha. Here, Rebbe included a Mishnah or taught a Mishnah that is unnecessary.
Wait. Is that actually a time when they say... like,
this Mishnah could have been erased.
When it actually means we don't need it, as opposed to no, we
need it. I mean, kind of. I mean, he says, Mishnah Sheino Tzricha. It is a teaching, a Mishnah that is unnecessary, meaning something is already known, that this Mishnah is telling us something we already know. So the question is, what do we already know that makes this unnecessary? So Machlokas Rashi Tosfos. Rashi says like this. Look at Rashi, Dibur Masfil. Mishnah Sheino Tzricha, he says what? Dezil Kari Be Ravhu. It's something that you can ask in the schoolhouse, meaning even kids know this law. What do we know? Alea Bechaya, it says in the Torah in Vayikra that it's he is with her only in her life. It says Bechaya. Shola Nasra Bachota Ela Bechaya. She is only usher to him while she is alive, right? Meaning when the Pasuk says Alea Bechaya, she cannot get married, he cannot get married to her in the lifetime of his wife. That is the only time that she is usher. It's obvious, you can go to school children, they'll be able to tell you what it says in Tanakh. Meaning it's an explicit Pasuk. There's no reason for Rebbe to have to tell us. Because we know it already, it's in a Pasuk. Of course we know Tanakh. So well, that's the assumption, right? And Tosfo says, that makes no sense. No sense. He says, Dibur Maskel Shana. Says, Vikasha. That's hard for what Rashi said. Dibikama Mekomot, because in many places, Shone Hatana Masha B'Pasuk B'Ferish. There are many instances in Chazal where they teach a teaching that is an explicit Pasuk. That's what Tosos says. Therefore, Tosos comes up with a different way that it is obvious. He says it's a repetition from a previous Mishnah. It's already known for logical reasons or for literary reasons, but not for the reason of Rashi, which is that it's already in the Torah. Okay. We're going to try to figure out what the root of this machlokes is, but let's just see throughout Shas, does this come up elsewhere? And it turns out it does. It comes up all over, and I'm giving you, I know that there's at least two places where Rashi talks about this throughout Shas. Wait, so it could be that there's more.
What is Rebbe
Rav Yosef complaining about? Rav Yosef is complaining about, I have to look back, if you want an exact answer from Tosfos, I have to look back at it, you can look it up also. But if I remember correctly, it's the previous Mishnah already says this basically. You can infer this from the previous Mishnah. It didn't have to teach this Mishnah because it was already implied in the previous one.
I see.
Meaning, if you just learned Torah Shabbat Peh, you would have known this already. Okay. Let's see if they're consistent throughout Shas. I know of at least two places where Rashi talks about this in other Gemaras, and I know many places where Tosfos talks about this, but I only brought two here, okay? Both in Shabbos, it happens to be. So let's look at the Rashis first. The Mishnah in Horiot all about the laws of when leaders make mistakes and people follow the rulings of that are mistaken. Horiot means rulings, and if the Beit Din, the Sanhedrin, makes mistakes, then you know what happens. You have to bring karbanos, which shows you, by the way, that there's and people have pointed this out. The rabbis were not considered infallible. There, it's possible to make mistakes in halach. So what does the Mishnah say? This is bet, right? The Mishnah Horio or Zion Amibet, right? Hore HaKohen Mashiach Bifnei Atmo. Let's say the Kohen Mashiach makes a psak for himself, the Asa Bifnei Atmo, and acts according to that psak by himself, mit kaper lo bifnei atzma. Then he has to do a kapara, he has to bring a karban for himself. Nobody else is affected by it. So the Gemara goes on to say, goes to explain this Mishnah. The Gemara says what? That the Kohen made a mistake, behorat atzma, but, right, the Kohen Mashiach made a mistake. The Kohen made one Isser of a mistake, but then the Beis Din also made a mistake on a different Isser. And we can't go into exactly the details. We're not learning that Gemara exactly, but it splits up. There's two things going on here. There's the Kohen made a mistake, and the Beis Din made a mistake. And the question is, why did it feel the need to add in the Beis Din? It sounds like it's just the Kohen himself who makes a mistake, gives a karbon. Why did the Beis Din have to come in to this where they also make a mistake in this case? And Rashi says, because you would already know from the Torah that when a Kohen makes a mistake, that he has to bring a karbon. Let's look at this. Rashi, the ihorahu bifnei atzmo v'lo Beis Din klal, because, right, you see the Rashi here, on it's on Zion of the Bet. If he had made a ruling himself, a mistaken ruling, and Beis Din was not involved at all, lo itzrech lemitnei, it would not have been necessary for it to teach the chayiv, that he would be chayiv lehevi par, to bring a karban. Demikra malehu, because it is a complete pasuk, meaning it's a explicit pasuk in the Torah, right? So what would have been the point? Therefore, ela ki yitzvach lemitni ki gonsha or b'shnei yisurim. That's why the Gemara had to come along and make the case more complicated. You can look there exactly why, exactly what's going on with the case. But the case was more complicated than the Mishnah. The Mishnah only says like this. If a Kohen makes a mistake, and he acts himself, nobody else acts based on that mistake, a mistaken ruling, he is the one who has to bring a kapar. He is the one who has to bring a karban. So the Gemara makes it a more complicated case. And Rashi wants to know why. Rashi says, because it is already, that case is already known. If that is what the Mishnah is talking about, then it's a Mishnah She'eino Tzricha, because it's already known in the Torah. Right? So therefore, it has to be a more complicated case. That's what Rashi says, offers for why the Gemara itself is doing that. Very consistent with his opinion that the Gemara or the Mishnah will not include psukim that are not drushed. They are explicit psukim, and that's the explicit law. And another case where Rashi does this, sorry, it's a text-heavy shir, guys, you know, we're going to get through a lot of them today. Another place where Rashi does this, I just find this fascinating. I hope you find it fascinating, too. It's a methodology thing, because every time you read a Gemara and you're trying to figure out what's the chiddush here, I already know this from the Torah, you have to figure it out. That's what Rashi is telling you, right? Gemara and Kiddushin. A slave goes free if you damage certain parts of his body. It's explicit in the Torah. It says his shein v'ayin, his tooth in his eye. But what about other places? So, what? Yeah. I mean, tooth. What? Why is tooth? That's that. Whatever. It's damage. It's damage of his body that you have to let him go free. All right? So, what's interesting is that the Gemara doesn't name those things. It names a bunch of other stuff. That it's that if you damage those things, they go free. There's a whole list, again, of all sorts of different things that if you damage that part of that person's body, their arms and their fingers and different things, that if they're damaged, the slave goes free. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi says, but wait, there's even one more. And that's if you castrate him. You damage that part of his body, he goes free as well. Now, what's weird is that you would have expected maybe Rabbi Yehuda Anasi to say, but wait, you forgot two, which are the ones in the Torah. Shein v'ayin, the tooth in the eye. So look at Rashi. Mosif al, this is Dibur Matfil Rebbe Omer Afasirs. Mosif al Elu le'inan Eved. He added this in reference to the slave. Vishain v'ayin lo istrich le'elu Rebbe limnot b'tosefta. But Rebbe did not care to add in the tooth and the eye. Debehedyaktiv, because it's written in the Torah explicitly. Vizil kari be'rav. And you could just ask the schoolhouse. Everybody knows this. There's no need for you to list that in the Tosefta, in the Braita, if everybody already knows it. That's why he only adds one instead of the other two, right? He goes out of his way to add more, but he doesn't add the ones from the Torah because it's unnecessary. You already know that stuff. So, boom, two Rashis are very consistent with the Rashi in Yevamot. What does Tosfos do, though? Tosfos is...
Just the way you were leading this on, I was suspecting that Rashi was going to throw a curveball here.
No.
But I like it.
I think as far as I can find, unless somebody, you know, comes along with and shows me a different Rashi, as far as I can find, it happens to be at the end of this, I'll suggest a Rashi that might be a little different. Maybe I'll give a reason why somebody might say something that's just from a pasuk or the Gemara, but it's different. It's not the same. I think Rashi is completely consistent. Tosfos is all over the place. I don't give examples here. But Tosfos, because there are many different types of people and different ages, meaning throughout the ages of the Tosafists in, you know, and also some are in Spain and some are in Italy and some are in Germany and etc. What? Yeah, I think there's Tosfos in Spain. Maybe. Okay, let's just say Italy and Germany and places like that. France, right?
I thought they were based in France.
Not all of them. But yeah, there's the Tosafos of Sarfat. But there's also the Tosafos of Ashkenaz. There's even a Tosafist, I think, from London, if I remember correctly. Okay, but... Let's see, Tosfot, what does Tosfot do with these kind of Gemaras? We don't know. They don't comment on the Horio Gemara or in the Kiddushin Gemara to defend themselves against Rashi's position. However, there are two places where Tosfot says, you see here where it sounds like the Gemara is asking a question because it's explicit in the Pasuk, that's not what it means. So, for example, in Shabbos, Kuflun Lamed Gimel Amud Bet, it says like this in a Braita. Tana Rabbanan. It was on a Braita like this. Mehalktin et hamila v'imlo hilaket enosh karet. You have to finish off the mila, meaning if you're doing it on Shabbat, you're a mole, and you're trying to finish off the mila, you have to finish it off completely. As you have to remove the skin, right? Meaning if you're halfway into the job, finish it. And if you don't, if you only go halfway, normally it wouldn't be a karet situation, but it sounds like your punishment if you don't do it is karet. So that's a little weird. So Mani, who gets the karet? Am Rav Kana Uman. Rav Kana is of the opinion that the moel is the one who gets the karet for having presumably either. Well, okay, fine. So what exactly did he do? Right? Does he get the karet because he allowed somebody to be uncircumcised when he had the power to finish off and make sure they are circumcised? Or is it that he violated Shabbos? Right? So Matkiv la Rif Papa Uman Lemaluhu Anna Avdi Palga de Mitzvah Atuna Vida to Palga de Mitzvah. So Rif Papa asks a logical question. Hey, what could the mole have said? Right? The mole could have said to the parents, this is your obligation. I'm your shliach. I did half the mitzvah. You do the other half of the mitzvah. Finish it off. I don't want to. I'm finished. You only gave me half the money anyway. Something like that, right? But that's what the Gemara says. Why can't he make this claim, says Rav Papa. Elamar Rav Papa, rather Rav Papa said, Gadol, who gets the kares? The adult, uncircumcised, or half-circumcised person. If they don't get that fixed, or it could be that you know, that baby that was getting circumcised on Shabbos and only went halfway, he grows up, he's now 13 years old, and he has a choice. Do I finish the job or not? And he decides not to. That's when he gets karis, says Rif Papa. That's his opinion. Not the mole who gets karis, but rather the person who is half circumcised. Makif lo Ravashi, so Ravashi asked on him, Gadol? Behed yiksiv be. The problem is, we know in the Torah that someone who does not get circumcision gets karis. It says that explicitly in the Torah. You don't need a brisa to come along and say, oh, if you only got circumcised halfway, you need to finish it. Otherwise, you get karis. You know how I know? Because it says in the Torah, if you're not circumcised, which means the full circumcision, then you get karis. It says in the Torah, what are the words? In Bereshit Yedzayin, the arel zachar, asher lo yamol. When an uncircumcised male doesn't get circumcised, he gets karis. That's what it says in the Torah. You don't need a brisa to come along and tell you that. So Tosfos has a problem with that, right? Tosfos says, well, the Gemara does this all the time, so why not, right? Why would the Gemara itself have a problem with the fact that it says explicitly in the Torah what the brisa says? So I have to come up with a different reason. Tosfos, Dibur Maskil Gadol Behed Yekzibe. He says like this: Afal Gafdik Bekama Duchtin Tanya. Even though there are many places in the Gemara where the Tano will teach something that is explicit in a pasuk, ibayle limitne gadol shelo mal anosh karet. It had to tell you, or I'm sorry, it should have said in the Mishnah explicitly gadol. Here's what the Braita says: someone who is doing mila and he only goes halfway, he gets kares. So the he gets kares is unclear there. So what was Ravashi's question, according to Tosfos? It says that explicitly in the pasuk, if it's referring to a person gets kares for not being circumcised. If it meant that, according to Tosfos' understanding of Ravashi, it should have said that in the Brisa explicitly. It should have said, not an ambiguous he, but it should have said, gadol onesh kares. It should have said that. Instead, if it meant to tell you that, but it said it in a very weird way, why would it say that? Then why would it say, it's already known in the pasuk. Why tell us it, like, in a roundabout way, enosh kares, if we don't know who it's talking about? It should be said explicitly in the brisa if it's going to be an explicit pasuk as well. Tough answer, I think. Another place where Tosfos does this, another place, is in Shabbos Chof Chet Amabet. Just believe me that it's there, because we have to move on for time. Tosfos, Dibor Matchil, Tfilin Behedyah. Okay? So having to do with the laws of Tfilin, you can look there, where he also tries to give an answer for the Gemara, which seemingly has a problem with a Mishnah or Braisa saying something that's already in Chosef Pasuk. Let's get some... Okay, so we saw there are several Gemaras, at least two, that... or at least four, actually, at this point, that sound like Rashi. And Tosfos has to come along and try to give an answer for why it's not like Rashi. Here's four Gemaras, now that we've given four Gemaras on the other side, here's four Gemaras, or at least two Gemaras, one Mishnah, and one Midrash, that sound like Tosfos. That these are seemingly explicit Sukkim in the Torah, and yet they are said as if they're like profound law statements. You ready? Pirkei Avot. Shmuel HaKatan Omer. Shmuel HaKatan would say, this is in Pirkei Avot, Dalad Yitem. Shmuel HaKatan would say, Bin Fol Oivecha Al Tismach. This is a quote from Mishlei. That's his entire statement.
Before your enemy, do not rejoice.
Not before, but at the fall. Is that what you meant? At the fall of your enemy, do not rejoice. And this is relevant for some people having to do with Trump and whatever. But ube kashlo al yigal yivecha, and when he trips up, don't make your heart glad. Pen yir Hashem v'ra beinav, lest God see it and it be bad in his eyes. Ve'yishiv ma'alav apa, and he gives you his anger. That's a explicit pasuk in Mishlei. That's the entire statement of Shmuel HaKatan. That is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that is literally Shmuel would say this pasuk, and that would be his thing.
Wait, does he also say the
Nothing else. There's nothing else in that Mishnah for Shmuel HaKatan. Now, it happens to be that if you look at the Girsa of the Rambam, like in Kafach's edition, and maybe others.
Oh, he does have a slight...
it's a slight different drasha, and it's actually going on certain words there that he has a drasha. But in our version, it's not. Okay?
I will say that I would want to give a little bit of a pass on Pirkei Avos.
Okay, I hear.
It's not... teaching straight halacha.
That's true. You could just get a sense of their personality by, and also you'll see. Well, maybe we'll mention this at the end that there's certain times where people will, you know, that was the thing that they would say. They would always repeat that pasuk. They really love that pasuk, right? But it sounds like, you know, Tosfos would have an easy answer. Tosfos would be able to say, why does Shmuel say this pasuk? Because there's many times where Mishnayos will just say straight out Pesukah. Okay. Gemara and Brachos. Listen to this. Gemara and Brachos on Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. Here we go. Amar of Huna, Amar Rav. Mishum Rabbi Meir. Huna says the name of Rav, says the name of Rabbi Meir. Lo'olam yu dvarim shal adam mu'atin lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person should speak as little as possible before God. Should make his words small.
Is that in which one?
Well, this is a statement that they had.
This is just the statement. Okay.
Rabbi Meir would say this. Shenemar, as it says in Kohelet, Al tifal al picha v'libecha al yimaher lo tzi devar lefnei Elokim. That when you speak to God, don't say too many words. Ki hal Elokim b'shamayim, because God is in heaven. V'ata al ha'aretz, and you are on earth. Al kein yiyu devarecha me'atim. Therefore, your words should be small. You should be minimize your words.
Okay.
That's an explicit verse. Maybe you can come up with a chiddush there, but it's not obvious. Tosfos had a pretty good answer for this, which is happens all the time. That's the way you know the Gemara goes. Rav Epstein is wrong, right? Because I don't think we even mentioned this explicitly, but Rashi, you know, according to the Torah Tamima, Rashi, he takes on Rashi's position, right? That there's nothing in the Gemara that will just be an explicit pasuk. But according to Tosfos, it happened all the time. He's disagreeing with Tosfos. Okay, one more. Or two more. Sanhedrin Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph. This one says like this. Akiva klum chisarti mina Torah kula? Or I'm sorry, Rabbi Eliezer is the teacher of Rabbi Akiva, I think, and he says, Akiva, have I left out anything from the Torah? So now it's his chance, right? Rabbi Akiva's chance to say what his teacher has taught him, what the main teaching of his Rebbe is. And, you know, he's on his deathbed, he wants to tell him what his main teaching of his Rebbe is, and he says, Amar lo, limadetenu rabbeinu, our Rabbi taught us the following pasuk from Kohelet. Ki adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo chet. There's no yechata. There's no tzadik on earth who only did good and never sinned. That's your teaching to us. You taught us this pasuk. So according to Rashi, it's hard to understand exactly what does that mean. He taught him a pasuk. Okay, everybody knows this pasuk. You learned it in school.
How do we know Rabbi Eliezer didn't literally teach him?
Okay, but it's a little difficult to say that's the important teaching you taught us, right? No, it's Rabbi Eliezer, I think, on his deathbed, if I remember correctly.
We did say that Rabbi Akiva only started learning at age 4, right?
Right.
Okay.
Oh, okay, interesting. You want to say that he started with, like, the Aleph Beis and with Pesukim, and this is something, because he's on his deathbed and saying, you sinned, basically, he's quoting a pasuk. Yeah.
Is this Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Akiva?
Rabbi Eliezer's on his deathbed. He says to Rabbi Akiva, is there anything I left out? And he says, you know, I haven't left out anything. And so Rabbi Akiva's chance is to respond with, you taught us this pasuk in Kohelet, that nobody dies without sin. Right? So it's a little weird. I mean, like, okay, you can quibble with this. Maybe it's not such a good example. Fine. You know, it's like, you know, conversation between two people. Maybe, you know, a goddess can do this. You know, we wouldn't do this when it comes to halacha, or we wouldn't do it when it comes to derabanan.
I am curious if this is Akiva suddenly.
That's an interesting answer also. Right. Rabbi Akiva maybe literally did learn Pesukim from Rabbi Eliezer because he had to start somewhere. I hear that. Let's look at this midrash, this fourth example in Vayikra Rabbah, Yud Zayin Aleph. This is one I found. I'm like, great, I could add it to the sheet. Here we go. Karov Hashem l'chol karav. Right? God is close to all those who call him. So where is that from? Where do you say that?
Ashrei.
Ashrei, very good. Right? Yachol l'chol.
If you want to be
right, that's true. Okay, fine. Yachol l'chol, I might, right? God is close to all who call him. I might think that literally means everybody, Talmud Lomar, L'chol Asher Yikru Be'emet. Everybody who calls to him in truth. What's the problem? You just read the second part of the pasuk. If I went to the halfway part of this pasuk, I might misunderstand it. Therefore, tell me the rest of the pasuk. Right? A little bit difficult, right? A little bit. It's a little weird. A little weird of a drasha. Tosos would say it does. That's the way Midrashim works. Sometimes they just quote Psukim. It's a little weird in and of itself to be doing this.
Okay, I don't really see how Rashi's going to do that again.
All right, like you're convinced now. You thought Rashi was like more correct before, and now I've convinced you that Tosos may be more correct. All the Rishonim, except for maybe the Ramban, which I didn't quote here, but almost all the Rishonim side with Rashi. So, for example, Chidush Ha'aron on Sanhedrin Yud-Chet Amud Aleph says like this. This is on the second page, source number one in the middle. Right? I did a lot of ones here. You know, every time we did a new section. So, for example, Chidush Ha'aron Sanhedrin Yud-Chet Amud Aleph Lo Hutzra Chatana L'Lameid Ala Inyan Zeh. The Tana didn't have to teach this thing. Ki Adua Hu Mina Katuv Ve'Ein Bedvar Chidush. You didn't have to teach the thing because it was obvious. So basically, he's the Rishon is saying this is something that is unnecessary because it already is in a pasuk like Rashi. Ritva says it similarly on Tanit Bet Amud Aleph, where he wonders why the Mishnah focuses on what things you say during Tefillah, but doesn't even talk about the sources of doing that. And he describes that how in Brachos they also, what's the first Mishnah in Brachos? Does anybody know?
First, so
when do you say Kriya Shema Shel Arvit? But it never tells you, and even the Gemara asks this, wait, hold on, Kriya Shema, tell me about the obligation first. So the Ritva says, you know why? Because it doesn't tell you everything that's already in the Torah, and we already know that you have to read Kriya Shema in the Torah. We already know a lot of these things. So therefore, right, Perusho HaNachon, the correct explanation is, the Kol Ki HaGavna, anything like this, She'ein Chiyuvo Mefurash B'Tkasov, where it's not explicit in the Pasuk, Nikara Islei L'Tana L'Misei, then the Tana wants to teach you that first. He wants to emphasize that. V'hadar tani zmana de chiyuva, and then he tells you what the time is for the chiyuv, etc., etc. So maybe you can argue, maybe he's saying, well, let's read this. Masha, there's the last line of the Ritva. Masha ain came besuk of lula v'shofar shi chiyuvim mefurash because of lohut zorchatan alishnos ela hilchotehem. That's why you'll find that there's no Mishnah in Hilchos Sukkah that says you have to make a sukkah. Or you have to shake a lulav. It won't say it like that. It'll say the particular halachos of shaking a lulav, etc. But it won't just say, you know, there's a... Because it's already known in the Torah. You know that you have to shake a lulav. Now, how do you shake a lulav? What kind of lulav should it look like? Well, you know, what are the different dinim of it? Okay, fine. That's what the Ritva says. And the Rashba in Bava Kama Nunvav Amud Aleph also says similarly, I betray midaraita nami mechayev kolomar lo haya tzarich lomar bezo Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Yehoshua did not have to teach this thing in Bava Kama. It doesn't matter the context right now. The mechayev bedinei shemayim. Why? The pshita shehatorah chayev ato dechtiv im lo yagid benasa avono. It's obvious from the Torah. It already says it in the Torah. Lastly, of the other Rishonim, besides for Rashi and Tosos, again, all of these are siding with Rashi, the Rashbam in Bava Batra on Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, Dibor Matkel, Kiruvin Vishimon, says, Deloka Amar Breita of Omer Kiruvin Vishimon Yuli, the fact that the Breita does not mention the Pasuk of Kiruvin Vishimon, Hainu Vishim de Milsab de Pshita Leg, Latana Yoter Midai, because it's so obvious too. The Tana, because everyone knows what's in the Torah, Hilkoch lo chash lahaskir dezil kari beirafu. And since you can ask kids in the schoolhouse, you don't have to mention it in the Braisa. So very similar language to Rashi, actually. Rashbam actually used to learn pshat with Rashi. We know that from Rashbam in Bereishit Lamed Zion. So it's an interesting. It says that he would argue with Rashi that he should have been even more pshat. That's what it says. He would argue with his grandfather, Raj. I want to know, WWRS, what would the Rambam say? That's what we care about in this yeshiva. Does the Rambam take a side? So, the Rambam never mentions this precise topic. But in his Perush Mishnah on Menachot, Perek Dalet, he talks about how there are lots of things that did not end up in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi decided not to put certain things in the Mishnah, and he says the reason is because everybody already knew about it. So let's read that inside. He says, Dinei hatzitzit, the hatfilin, the hamezuzah, all of these things. See, there's no Mishnah tzitzis. There's no Mishnah tefillin. Yeah, it's in Menachos. It's included in other Mishnahs. There's no Mishnah Chanukah. You notice that? The inyan melachtan va'abracho shechayavin levarich aleihem. You have no mishnah, you have no mesechet that's dedicated to how to make tefillin, what brachos you're supposed to make on them. Chol inyanim atulim b'chol zeh, all the different laws that are related to that. Min adinim umash nemar aleihem b'sheilos v'tshuvos, and all these different backs and forths of what to do. Ein ro'oy kifi kabbalat chiburenu l'daber b'hem. We in our thing are not going to talk about these things. How, you know, all the different laws about them. She'eno ela mefarish v'amishon lo dibra al ela hamitzvot, because they're so obvious and the Mishnah didn't even talk about it. Al ela hamitzvot dvar miyuchad l'chlo dinam. The Mishnah didn't even make a specific mesachet for them. Ashi echayv lefarish otam, that one would have to explain them because it's so obvious. Risibat zeh be'enai, and the reason for this is because in my eyes, at least, in the time of the writing of the Mishnah, of the composition of the Mishnah, everybody knew the laws of tefillin. You didn't have to ask anybody, how do you make tefillin, what brachos do you make? They all knew it. There were people practiced them, and they knew about them. Everybody, every single person. Prat v'chlam. Nothing was wondrous to them, meaning nothing was unclear to them. Mishum adam, for any person, v'alkein, lo ra'a l'daber b'hem, that's why Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi decided to leave them out. K'mo shelo hisdir tefila, that's why Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi also didn't make a sitter as part of his Mishnah. That's a lomar nuscha, right, to make the text of the sitter. The eich yitnahek shliach tzibur, he also didn't describe how the shliach tzibur is supposed to act. We don't know any of those things. We have to rely on the questions that happen in the Gemara and Brachos, let's say. The Fishayim before some, because it was so obvious to them. The Lo Chibru Bezes Sidur. They didn't write a Siddur of Al Chibru Sefer Gemara Ubiro. But then the Gemara comes along and gives a lot of clarification of what's supposed to go into your Tefillah, what's supposed to go into Tefillin and Mezuzah and Tzitzis, and they all fill that stuff in. So according to the Rambam, the reason why certain things are not in the Mishnah is because they're obvious. So, according to the Rambam, it sounds like something that would be obvious would not be included in the Mishnah. Including, maybe, Psukim. If Psukim would already be known to the people at the time of the writing of the Mishnah, which I assume the Rambam assumed people knew Psukim, so therefore, he would say, I assume, like Rashi, that things would not be included in the Mishnah if they're explicit Psukim. Can we add? Now, it could go the other way. It could just as easily, just from this, you could say, well, maybe according to the Rambam, people don't generally know Psukim, at least in our day, right? We don't know, Tanakh cold, most people. And so therefore, maybe even in the time of the writing of the Mishnah, they didn't know it. And so maybe it is included in the Mishnah. It could go either way. Now, it happens to be, when you look at the Rambam's description of the writing of the Mishnah in his Hakdamah to the Mishnah Torah, he says that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was afraid of a very, he collected very specific things into his Mishnah. Kol HaShmua, this is the line from Hakdamah LeMishnah Torah. The Kol HaShmua, Kol HaDinim, Kol Biurun, Va'Perushim, Shoshamu Moshe Rabbeinu. Anything that was heard from Moshe Rabbeinu, all the explanations, that was what was put into the Mishnah. V'shilimdu beitin shebechol dover dover chol Torah kula, and all the things that the beitin clarified about the Torah shebechtav, they put v'chiber me'akol sefer Mishnah. That's what you put into the Mishnah, meaning all the things that are Torah shebechtav, all the things of explanations of the Torah shebechtav, they put into the Mishnah. That's what he put in. Okay, interesting. We still, I don't know if we completely know, but we can maybe make an argument that he's saying it's not the Torah itself, but the things that are explanations of the Torah, or rulings about the Torah, but not exactly the Torah. However, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, meaning the Rav, in Hari Kedem Chelek Aleph on Chanukah, Kuf Nun Chet, notes that if you look at the Mishnah Torah's description of Hilchot Chanukah versus Hilchot Megillah, there's a big difference, one huge difference between them, which is that in Hilchot Megillah on Purim, he does not give the entire story of Esther and Haman and Mordechai. However, if you go to the beginning of Hilchot Chanukah, he gives all the details of the story of how they fought the battle and they won and they found the oil and there was a miracle and things like that. Why does the Rambam spend time giving us the story and not halacha in Hilchot Chanukah, but he doesn't do it in Megillah?
So one, like, I mean, these, we don't have a Megillus, or at least a canon Megillus Maccabean.
So
we do have a canon Megillus Esther.
Ah, that's true. Right. So what you're saying is there is something already in Torah Shebichtav for Megillah that is not there for Torah, for Hilchos Chanukah. That's exactly what the Rav says, which sounds like that he's saying that's how the Rambam wrote his Mishnah Torah, was based on this fact that something is already in Torah Shebichtav. It's unnecessary to write in the Mishnah Torah. All right. So I can read it to you here. It says, Ulam behelchos Megillah lo katav haRambam sham et sipor anis. The Rambam doesn't write the story of the miracle when it comes to Purim. V'nira hu dehu mishum da sipor mufurash b'Megillas Esther. It must be that it's already in Megillas Esther. You don't need to write it in the Mishnah Torah. She Torah shebichtav, because that's already Torah shebichtav. HaRambam katav b'akdamato l'sefer Mishnah b'zeh l'shalom. And listen to what the Rambam says in his the introduction to his Mishnah Torah of how he's going to write the Mishnah Torah. He says, or what the reader, should do with his Mishnah Torah. Lefikach karati shem achibor zeh Mishnah Torah. Therefore, I called the name of this thing the Mishnah Torah, which means the repetition of the Torah. Lefisha adam kore b'Torah shebichtav tchila, because all a person needs to do is learn the Torah shebichtav first. The acharkach kore b'zeh yodeh mimenu Torah shebapeh, and then he can read the Torah shebapeh and understand it. Or read my book and understand the Torah Shabbat Kula. He holds. You learn the Torah Shabbat separately from my book. You don't even need to learn the Gemara, it sounds like. Right? That got him in a lot of trouble. The Eino Tzarech Likrot Sefer Acher Benem. You don't need a single book between the Torah Shabbat and my book. Right? Got him in a lot of trouble. A lot of people are upset with that. You're saying people don't need to read the Gemara? You're saying that, you know, the entire Yeshiva institution is gone for it? So, according to the Rambam, sounds like Rashi, you already know, you need to have an obligation, you have to learn the Torah Shebichtav. That is not what the Rambam says he's going to include in his Mishnah Torah, according to the Rav. Very, very interesting. And so he says, right, the Rambam goes on, the Rav is going on and saying, this means that you learn the halachos from the Mishnah Torah in combination with the Torah Shebichtav. And if you read Torah Shebichtav, guess what? You're going to know the Purim story. That's why he didn't have to repeat in his Mishnah Torah that which is already in Torah Shebichtav. However, he has to do it for Chanukah. Chanukah is not in Torah Shebichtav. The Sefer Mishnah Torah, Atzma Hu HaTorah Shebichtav. Because the Rambam views himself as his Mishnah Torah as the Torah Shebichtav. And I'll make maybe the argument, there are some proofs to this, that the Rambam might have seen himself as a second Moshe, second coming of Moshe, I guess you can say.
Don't they say like
Mimoshe? Yeah, Mimoshe ad Moshe, Lokam Kamoshe. Right, exactly. So maybe the Rambam himself might have seen himself that way. He wrote his Mishnah Torah as Torah Shabbat Peh. So he is writing the Torah Shebichtav. This is Torah Shabbat Peh. All right. That might be a good proof. That's the Rav. I think that's a pretty good proof. The Rambam, again, in his Akdamah to the Mishnah, also talks about what the purpose was of writing down the Mishnah. What was the purpose of writing down the Mishnah?
So we don't forget it.
Ah, exactly. People are starting to forget it. What's not going to happen? What book of the Judaism are you not going to forget, even if you go into Galus, Torah Shebichtav, because it's already written down. So according to the Rambam's understanding of why the Mishnah was written down, there would be no purpose to have in the Mishnah things that are in Torah Shebichtav, because the only heter to write down the Mishnah was those things that you were liable to forget. I mean, the Rambam also says that in Mishnah Torah he wrote it in the Lashon of the Mishnah, specifically, because he wants it to be able to be read by as many people as possible. Anyway, that's the important thing. And he also split it up, similar. What?
Yeah, and he didn't write it in a language that would be difficult to understand, like Aramaic.
Right, he didn't write it in you didn't write the Mishnah Torah in Arabic. He wanted it to be as well known as possible. He didn't write it in biblical Hebrew even, because he wanted it to be well known as possible. So Maybe he's writing in Mishnei Hebrew. He's seeing his Mishnah Torah as similar to the Mishnah, and he's saying that in his, according to the Rav, in his Mishnah Torah, he's not going to put any psukim, things that are already known by other people. Now, individual psukim, maybe that's different. You know, knowing a story is very different than like knowing individual psukim. I can hear that argument. Okay, we're nearing the end of this shir. What is the root of the dispute? Why is Rashi and the Rambam, and maybe every other Rishon, disagree with Tosfos, and what do we do, and maybe the Rambam? How can we understand this? As I referenced in the beginning, there's a well-known machlokas, Rashi versus Tosfot, about whether Talmidei Chachamim are required to know Tanakh. So, for example, in Rashi, in Shemot, Lamed Aleph Yichet, says like this, Talmid Chacham Tzarich Li Yob Baki, he has to be an expert, Be'asrim Va'arba Sfarim, in the 24 books. What are the 24 books? Of the canon, of Tanakh. Right? However, Tosfos and Bava Batra says it's not required. Pamim Shelo Hayu Bakin B'Psukim. He says, it happened that many times, there are at least some times, says Tosfos, that the Tanaim and Amoraim did not know P'sukim. They weren't expert, I should say, in P'sukim. So it means that there must not be an obligation. I mean, they're Tanaim and Amoraim. I'm making that extension, but I don't think it's too far. Happens to be that also we can attach this to another machlokas about how to split up your time of learning. According to Tosfos, when it says in the Gemara that a person should split their learning into thirds, one Mikra, that's the Tanakh, one Mishnah, one Gemara, he says all you have to do is Gemara and you get the Mishnah and you get the Mikra because it's so mixed into the Gemara, you learn a lot of Psukim. If you're doing Sota now, I don't know if anybody's doing, you're learning a lot about the Psukim, right? I mean, every Gemara is like that. So, that's what Tosfos says. Now look at what the Rambam says. The Rambam understands that very differently. You can't just rely on the Gemara, it sounds like, to gain your knowledge of Tanakh. Rather, what? This is in Talmud Torah Aleph Yud Aleph. V'chayev l'shalesh et zman l'midato. A person should appropriately split up his time for learning. Into thirds. Shlish b'tor shebichtav. You should learn. A third should be Torah Shebichtav, Shlish B'Torah Shebalpeh, a third should be Torah Shebalpeh, and then the third one, which is Gemara, should be Shlish Yavin Miyaskil Acharit Tavar Mirishito. You should use logic. According to the Rambam, Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara is Mikra is Tanakh, Mishnah is Torah Shebalpeh in general, and the one that's called Gemara is using logic and the Torah, the Midot Shetorah, Nidrash Rabbanan, etc. But what do you see? The first thing is Torah Shebichtav. You have to learn Torah Shebichtav. In the next halacha, he says once you gain Torah Shebichtav, you should focus on on the Gemara and Torah Shebalpeh and stuff. But he says you should still make time to learn Torah Shebichtav. So apparently there might be, or at least Rambam and Rashi are on the same side that you have to know Torah Shebichtav. But the Tosfos doesn't care about knowing necessarily Torah Shebichtav because it's already whatever's included in Torah Shebalpeh is all we need. That fits into this machlokas wonderfully. What is the obligation of the Torah learner today? If you don't have to know Psukim in order to be a Talmud Chacham, then it makes sense that the Mishnah will put Psukim in. Explicit laws in the Psukim because you don't know it. It has to be included in Torah Shebichtav because you don't know Torah Shebichtav. According to Rashi, things would be included in Torah Shebichtav that are Torah Shebichtav. It cannot include Torah Shebichtav because you are required to know that previously. That's the root of the dispute. And I see. We are. That was the Rashi Rambam Tosfos section 1, 2, and 3. So I just finished number 3 there. Now, you know, there are some things I wanted to just mention. There are other Gemaras, other Rishonim, including Rashi, that make it sound like sometimes the Gemara will include a pasuk or an interpretation of a pasuk that's so obvious because it's a style. It's a style. That's the way it goes. So, for example, in Rashi and Bava Kama, Yitzayin Amad Aleph says this, Lo Ashminan Zezeu Chizkiyahu, Dehai Krab Chizkiyahu Ksiv. It didn't need to tell you to identify who this was in the Pasuk, because it's obvious it's Chizkiyahu. Ela Agav Orche Demifarish Mai Kavar Asulo. But because it wanted to explain the rest of the Pasuk, it wanted to name who was in the Pasuk, even though it's obvious to you. Okay, so I told you there's going to be an exception to Rashi where he says that something can be included that's unnecessary, but he's saying it's necessary insofar as they wanted to get to the next thing. So they just said this. Fine. Now, maybe that's different. The Ritva, pretty consistently, even though we saw that he signs on to Rashi, pretty consistently he'll say, give an explanation of why certain things seem to be extra in terms of, it's, we already know that from a pasuk. Sometimes he'll say, the idea is the Yagdil Torah V'Adira. We want to enhance our Torah. We want to have as many words as possible, learn as much as possible. So sometimes it'll quote things that are unnecessary for the sake of that. For example, in Yevamot Nun Aleph, Amud Aleph, where we had our original Machlokas, he also Ritva and Moi Katan Tesvav Amud Aleph, and also Nevod Azar Nun Bet Amud Bet. You can go through those with your sheets over here. Second possibility. Okay, so that was the first one, which is sometimes it's a style thing. Or maybe it just wants to be, you know, give a lot of words. Possibility number two is sometimes we need to include psukim, even though they're unnecessary, because there are fools out there, and we really want to show them that it says that in the Torah. So Rav Shimon Mikinun says in his Sefer Akritut, which is the rules of the Gemara, I don't know anything about this person, but I saw this line. Matzini Shishona b'Mishnah, Devar She'inu Tzarech. Sometimes it'll say in the Mishnah something that's unnecessary. Rak lehotzi milev hashutim, just to tell fools that they're wrong. Not clear exactly what's wrong in this case. Unclear. But he says that happens sometimes. It'll be unnecessary, but it's for the fools, you know, to prove them wrong. And number three, we mentioned this above with Shmuel HaKatan, that he said this pasuk in Pirkei Avot. Maybe that just means he likes to say it. He would say that often. And in fact, we have a Tosfot like that in Tubot, Chaf Bet Amud Bet, that says, and it has Rabbi Asi saying just a pasuk. Tosfot says, pasuk hu, this is just the pasuk, Ela de Rabbi Asi Ragil Lehavio. But Rabbi Asi would say that often. That's why, even though it's just the pasuk, we quote Rav Asi as saying that. So we have three possibilities of understanding Tosfos, even though we have some proofs for Tosfos. One is sometimes it's style, and even Rashi will say sometimes there's a style of adding in things that are unnecessary to get to the next thing. Number two is to fight against fools. And number three is that the person liked to say it, so the Gemara wants to tell you that he liked to say that thing, and that's a possibility of understanding Tosfos. Now, when, you know, you might be wondering, how is this controversial? I don't think it is. It might be a little boring, meaning it's methodology, it's text heavy, it's not exactly something that so many people are interested in. But I came up with a lot of chidushim having to do with the Rambam, because if we believe that the Rambam will never say anything that is an explicit pasuk, the problem is we find that happens every so often. And nobody notes this on the Rambam because nobody cares about this machlokas. But if he really holds like Rashi, then, and he believed that his Mishnah Torah, like the Rav said, should not have anything that's just an explicit pasuk, then he must be having a chiddush here. And if you figure out that chiddush, that hidden chiddush, then there's all sorts of nafkaminas. I can't give you examples offhand right here because I didn't put it on the sheet. I felt, you know, and I also erased it from the article. I would have to look back again. But there's a lot of different nafkaminas that could come out from that. If I were like a bigger man, I would make it an argument about certain things having to do with controversial issues, where the Rambam seems to be saying something that's just an explicit pasuk, but he can't possibly be doing that, so let's come up with what he must be actually doing. That's the shir. Thank you for listening, and thank you for expressing the interest. I'm interested in it. Maybe one day I'll even write a book. Shkoyach, guys. Thank you. Have a good night.